Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. One of the nation's leading nutritional researchers is Dr. T. Colin Campbell. Dr. Campbell is Professor Emeritus of Nutritional Biochemistry at Cornell University. Dr. Campbell's famous China Cornell Oxford Project, a 20-year study, is recognized as the most comprehensive study of nutrition ever conducted. His research led Dr. Campbell to author his best-selling landmark book, The China Study. On today's program, we are featuring part two of our two-part special feature radio broadcast of Dr. T. Colin Campbell's lecture on the China Study. He delivered this lecture in Honolulu, Hawaii, when I was nutrition director at Castle Medical Center on Oahu. This classic nutrition lecture is so important, I wanted to share it with you today. And today we are concluding with part two of Dr. Campbell's classic lecture on the China Study.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
The study was organized to include a total of 65 counties across the country to represent the entire population, and there were two villages taken in every county to make a total of 130 villages across the country. 100 individuals per county, or a total of 6,500 adults who we examined very carefully in terms of their blood, their urine, their food, other practices, and their families. And here's some of the details of the kind of information that we collected. At the end of the day, we organized the study in a way that was done as carefully as could be done. We went into the home. When I say we, I'm using that term a little bit liberally, because it's really my good friend, Dr. Chen Junshu, who really managed this remarkable study in China, who was able to do this. But in any case, they measured very carefully how much of the individual foods were consumed, actually weighed out, rather unlike what a lot of dietary studies are. We collected blood samples and urine samples, and we organized it in a way so we could actually validate our results, had them tested in various laboratories around the world, and could in fact check it that way. So we were kind of happy at the end of the day with the data. In fact, we ended up with a total of 367 items of information involving not only about a dozen different cancer rates, but also different rates for heart disease and diabetes and infectious diseases and a whole bunch of different kinds of diseases, as well as measuring a whole lot of things in blood, all the way from hormones to nutrients to viral activity to poisonous things like pesticides and heavy metals and so forth and so on. Fat intake in the United States, indicated before, is somewhere around 35% to 40% or so, was then, still is, more or less. In this study in rural China, their average fat intake was only 14% of calories. So they're really consuming a low-fat diet, a really low-fat diet. When I told you before that earlier years we had sort of said, let's cut our intake down to 30%, obviously that wasn't much. That really wasn't much. I mean, here in rural China, their average is around 14%, at least the time we did the study. It ranged between 6% and 24%. So they're really consuming a very low-fat diet. And that's what one gets when they're consuming more or less a plant-based diet and not adding back a lot of oils and so forth. Fiber intake was about threefold higher, dietary fiber. And there's hundreds of different kinds of dietary fiber, by the way. We measure different kinds of fibers. So just on that basis, and then of course, as I pointed out before, the animal protein concentration in the Chinese diet was only one-tenth what ours was. Those three things alone pretty well characterize the diet. We measure lots of other things too, but basically it shows that in rural China, they were consuming a diet largely plant-based, low-fat, high in fiber, and all the good things like that. And it turned out that blood cholesterol, which was a good indication of risk of heart disease, still is, was used then, still is these days. The higher the blood cholesterol, the higher the heart disease rates, you see. It turned out the blood cholesterol levels in rural China were remarkably low. It went from 90 milligrams per deciliter to 170. These are means for different counties. These are not individual values. Individual values were as low as 50 or 60 probably. But as far as averages for counties, it was between 90 and 170. The average was 127, unheard of here in the West. Their high was near our low. We range from about 170 to 270 or 300 or so, whatever it is. So as a result of their consuming far less animal foods, they were getting much lower blood cholesterol levels and, of course, much less heart disease. Subsequent to this, Dr. Bill Castelli, who was the executive director of the Framingham study, met for many, many years, and Colder Esselstyn and others who have worked with people in this country and using our data, in fact, have made the claim that they have never seen a person with heart disease who had cholesterol levels lower than 150. And indeed, in China, when we get down to the levels of cholesterol that low, that we had, for example, the best case scenario, I guess, was a county where it was something like 200 and I believe it was 277,000 deaths that had occurred, and not one of them was due to heart disease. So heart disease is virtually unknown in areas of the world where cholesterol levels are that low. The last two entries are related. Body mass index is an indication of body weight. And so what we see in the United States is a very high average body weight. Actually, it's a little higher than 25.8 right now. It's about 27.2. In China, it was about 20. So you can see, at least at that time, the average body weight in China, in rural China, was about only three-fourths of what it was here. It was much lower, about 25% lower compared to what it is here. In addition, and rather remarkably, these Chinese that had almost no obesity, no overweight problems, actually were consuming more calories per unit body weight. Now, this was really quite of a striking thing. I mean, we tend to think, you know, you consume more calories, you get body weight. Whereas in China, they were consuming more calories and getting less body weight. How so? Well, part of this clearly is due to the fact they're more physically active in China than we are here. But we tried to control that as best we could. These figures are for the equivalent of Chinese office workers who are the least active. And even so, the least active people are still consuming more calories and getting less body weight. Now, it's true that office workers in China are still more active than we are. They tend to go to the office, if you will, on bicycles. And so we have this sort of interesting relationship. They can consume more calories and gain less body weight. How so? Well, part of it is, I'm sure, and we can't distinguish and measure precisely how much is due to which, I'm sure that the extra physical activity helps to keep the body weight down. No question about that. On one hand. On the other hand, there's something else at work here, and that is when we consume low-fat diets, plant-based, it turns out that we can, in fact, consume a little more energy, because much more of the energy that is consumed, or the calories is consumed, instead of it going out into our body, gaining weight, if you will, it goes off as body heat. And interestingly, it also tends to stimulate physical activity. So people who use lower-fat diets, plant-based, tend to have less body weight and tend to be more physically active, not just because they have less weight to carry around, but there is this kind of thing going on to create that phenomenon. This slide here is a summary of really quite a vast amount of work that we did, just looking at various sundry-specific relationships that we were just simply interested in. We wanted to know, for example, whether fat intake was related to breast cancer. It turned out the higher the fat intake in China, the greater the breast cancer risk. That was going from 6% up to 24%. Breast cancer tended to go up. Really surprising. I mean, what was going on here? It wasn't a really strong relationship, but it was certainly statistically significant. It turns out that as fat intake goes up in China, it goes up because they're consuming more animal food. So the more consuming more animal food, and the protein and various similar things tend to increase breast cancer. Age at menarche, the age at when a young woman reaches her sexual maturation. Age at menarche in China, average age at menarche in China is 17 years. The range was from 15 years to 19 years. In this country, it's around 11 to 12 years. Now, what does that mean? Age at menarche is an excellent predictor of future breast cancer risk. The lower the age at menarche, the higher the breast cancer risk later in life. And why do people have low age at menarche? Why do they sort of reach this reproductive period earlier in Western countries? It's largely related to the fact that they're consuming diets that grow them as fast as we can grow people. So we tend to push our children to grow as fast as they can, give them a rich diet, and as a result, they reach the reproductive period early. I'm sure the same is true with males. It just so happens that with women, it's a little bit easier to get this kind of information. So in China, later age at menarche, earlier age at menopause. They are around 48, 47, 48 years. The Western woman is around 52, 53 years. What does that mean? Well, it turns out that in rural China, where breast cancer is rather uncommon, they have about 9 fewer years of reproductive life. And we measured this. It turns out that Western women, as indicated by British women in the particular case that we did, it turns out the estrogen levels, estrogen, you know, higher estrogen levels in blood tends to be associated with higher breast cancer risk. In any event, the estrogen levels in Western women is about 50% higher than in rural Chinese women. So we got 2 things going on here. In the Western women, we got a longer, more expansive reproductive period, number one. Number two, we got a 50% higher level of estrogen, circulating estrogen. That means the total exposure to estrogen, lifetime exposure to estrogen for the Western women, is much higher. Much higher. You just do the calculations, area under the curve, if you will. You do the calculations, the estrogen levels in the Western women is much higher. Why are estrogen levels higher in Western women? Because of the diet. Consuming animal protein-based foods has been shown many times to increase estrogen levels. Switching to a more plant-based food, estrogen levels begin to come down. Colon cancer, fiber, it turns out the higher the fiber intake, the less the colon cancer. We sort of knew that from Western literature, but in China, here they're consuming these high levels, we see this. And so we go on down the line here. Vitamin C, it turns out, is only present in plant food. The higher the levels of vitamin C in the blood, the lower the stomach cancer rates. Each of these that I've listed here did involve very serious in-depth studies that were subsequently published. But the point I want to make, after doing this kind of work, sort of focusing on some of these details, is sitting back and kind of kicking your feet up and looking and see, what do we see? It turns out that almost every time we looked, we saw that the closer that these folks got to an all plant-based diet, the lower was the risk for these diseases. It was quite clear. And that, of course, was really very impressive because it involved people who were consuming not very much animal food and lots of plant food. So we ended up with comparing something like 50 or so these so-called exposure or outcome comparisons, cause-effect relationships. When we compared all these things, as I said, it indicated that a plant-based diet was really good. And the remarkable thing was that it didn't take very much animal food. As I said, just going from 0% to 20% of total protein in the form of animal food actually elevated the risk. You can imagine, if we get that much increase in risk just going from 0 to 20, what are we doing now in this country consuming levels at 70% and 80% and 90%? So I had this final statement here. The richer the diet is in the kinds of amounts of nutrients provided by foods of plant origin, the lower is the risk for chronic degenerative diseases. Now, let me just go back and before I conclude, just return to the original observation that was made that led in this country to so much information that was focused on just fat. This is the plot that I showed you first. The relationship between total fat intake, that's total fat intake in breast cancer. If you look at this really carefully, and it crosses right here at the bottom, that line crosses the bottom saying that, you know, some fat's needed. You're not going to get, we have to consume some fat. And then when we go above that level, we get into trouble with breast cancer. These data were actually prepared by the late Professor Ken Carroll at the University of Western Ontario, a friend of mine. And he published also some other data in addition to total fat. He had information on breaking it down, you know, with reference to animal fat and plant fat for these different countries. And for animal fat, look at this. This relationship goes to the origin, so to speak, right to the zero point. In other words, it says as soon as you start putting animal fat in the diet, breast cancer risk immediately starts going up. In contrast, plant fat, you don't see anything like that. So something about animal food or animal fat versus plant fat. But now, let me come back and make another point. Animal fat, experimentally, does not increase breast cancer risk like does plant fat. You say, what's going on here? This is really strange. This is a paradox. Well, in reality, when this information is explored a little more carefully, it turns out that the plant fat we consume, like corn oil, Western oil, stuff like that, it can actually raise the risk for breast cancer and diseases, but only when the total fat intake is high. So the main point is to get the total fat intake down. So how do we get it down? Well, we don't do what we have been doing. We don't, for example, So all of a sudden start consuming skim milk instead of whole milk. That doesn't work. We don't use lean cuts of meat and expect that we're going to get some benefit. And so you see where that message came from and where it went to? We focused on fat, telling folks, you know, cut down a fat intake and use low-fat foods. And we also said, you know, eat your vegetables and grains and fruits, of course, too. But people didn't do that very much. They thought they, by cutting out the fat intake, they were going to achieve something. And we were now learning it doesn't work. It doesn't work. The fat intake that I have shown you there, that's only an indication of something else going on. We can't conclude that it was fat. We should not have concluded it was fat. Instead, it's that. It's animal-based food. So had we plotted originally, when I say we, the scientific community, but in general, had it been plotted this way in the beginning, which is the correct way of doing it, we would have taken away the emphasis on fat and put it where it really belongs, and that's animal foods. And so animal foods increase the risk of these diseases. That's really what's going on. And it increases the risk of those diseases, maybe a little bit because of the extra fat it contains, usually. Mind you, if you add a lot of plant oils in there and use fried foods with a lot of plant oils, you might get the same thing. So it's really animal foods. And within the animal foods or domain, the nutrient that really works best in increasing breast cancer risk and cholesterol levels is actually the protein. It's the animal protein. So it comes back full circle to what I was talking about in the beginning. Foods that contain animal protein, obviously it's animal-based foods. Foods that contain animal-based protein are the ones that causes the problems. And it doesn't take much. It's just a very small amount for some people. We really need to be consuming a plant-based diet. I had the good fortune of then beginning to meet some people outside of the traditional scientific community, a number of people, including, I should say, Dr. Terry Shintani here at Hawaii, who has an international reputation, really an outstanding individual. He's one of your own, and he really is very good. But in any case, I had an opportunity to start in and meet some physicians. I'm a scientist, I'm not a physician, so meeting some physicians around the country. Certainly heard of Dr. Bill Harris as well, although we had just met for the first time in this visit. In any case, there were physicians out there practicing and sort of coming to conclusions like what we were seeing in the research lab. And one of them, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, Jr. Dr. Esselstyn, how many of you heard of Dr. Esselstyn? Probably not very many. How many of you heard of Dr. Dean Ornish? Lots of people. Well, Dr. Esselstyn actually started his study a little bit before Ornish did and decided to do his study in a longer, over a longer period of time because he was particularly interested in doing it as long as he could. Dr. Esselstyn, by the way, is a surgeon at the Cleveland Clinic, very distinguished surgeon, president of his national society, publications, you know, lots and lots of publications. He had actually gotten the gold medal in the Olympics before he decided to be a surgeon. He decided that all the operations he was doing, whether it was on breast cancer, did a lot of breast cancer operations, heart disease and the like, they weren't really working as well as he might have liked and his colleagues might have liked. And so he thought there must be another way. I mean, they worked to some extent doing heart bypass surgery and angioplasty. Certainly relieves pain, there's no question about that, and helps people in that way. But in terms of extending life, that information is not all that convincing. That was his conclusion, at least at the time. So he decided to do, and we didn't know each other. He didn't know about the kind of work I was doing and others were doing like me. He decided to get a bunch of heart patients and get them involved in a study using a dietary approach. And so he invited 24 seriously ill heart patients to join the study. He wanted them to eat a certain kind of diet. He wanted them to eat a low-fat, plant-based diet. He didn't talk about stress. He didn't talk about exercise to any significant extent. And he said, I want you to just do it in your home. You don't have to come to the clinic. Just do it on your own. But I want to make sure you do it. And we're going to meet every week or two. And they did. And he took their blood cholesterol levels as he went along the way to make sure they adhered to it. These 24 people, 18 of them, decided to join a study. The other six said, no, it's too much for me. I'm not going to do that. So 18 decided to join the study. Now he has followed those 18 people for 17 years. Those 18 people, when they got in the study, had had 49 coronary events prior to getting in the study. 49 coronary events for 18 people. They were really very sick. So they had 49 coronary events before they went into the study, and eventually, over the next 17 years, they went from 49 coronary events to zero. He basically brought under total control progression of heart disease for seriously ill people. In science, it often been said, really aggressively for years, that although diet might help to prevent these diseases, it could not reverse advanced disease. It's too far along. What he, in fact, has shown, that's not true. Dr. Dean Ornish also did something very similar. He included stress management, exercise, and he published some results 1 year after he started his study and got the recognition that he got very quickly. But Dr. Esselstyn, a very sort of modest, low-key kind of man, did it for a long period of time and got these remarkable results. The six people who did not join the study, they went on the American Heart Association diet. That's what doctors tell people to do when they have heart problems. They didn't get better. Their disease progressively got worse. The 18 people who were on the total plant-based, low-fat diet really got better. Now, I will just finish trying to answer that other question to give it a more comprehensive view. If animal protein-based foods increase cancer risk, what about some other things? Well, animal protein had been shown in numerous studies, dozens of studies, as early as 1909, to be able to increase plasma cholesterol. Animal protein in human studies in Italy and Holland, the late 1970s, was shown to be able to increase plasma cholesterol more than saturated fat, more than cholesterol itself. And what have we been told? We've been told, you know, cut saturated fat, cut out of cholesterol as a means of reducing heart disease risk. That's not enough. That's hardly anything. What really matters is cutting out animal food altogether, because it's the animal protein that will increase cholesterol levels more than the saturated fat. Animal protein tends to increase a certain hormone called IGF-1. You probably haven't heard of it. Insulin like growth factor 1. It's sort of the cholesterol of the cancer field. The higher the IGF-1 levels, the higher the cancer risk. And animal protein-based foods elevate it and elevate cancer. Also, animal protein increases calcium bone loss. If you do a plot, and it's been done, if you plot animal protein intake versus bone fracture rate for different countries, the higher the animal protein intake, the higher the fracture rate. And some years ago in the 1980s, it was done with calcium. The higher the calcium intake, the higher the fracture rate. Where do we get our calcium and protein from, mostly, in Western countries? We get it from dairy. If you plot dairy intake versus osteoporosis in different countries, the higher the dairy intake, the higher the osteoporosis. Dairy counts have been telling us something rather different. And so I've had a recent opportunity to go back and look a little more exhaustively in some detail at the literature on some other things that I didn't know that much about, not in detail at least. And it turns out that in this last sort of bracket of things, I put them in brackets because I think it's very good evidence. Maybe it's not completely settled yet in detail, of course. But it turns out that people who consume more animal food get more cataracts. And then something more serious, this macular degeneration. Macular degeneration is the chief cause of blindness in older people. And it turns out that macular degeneration, the macula is a little body at the back of the eye, at the center of the retina. It begins to degenerate when we consume animal food. Alzheimer's disease, you know all about that. You've heard a lot about that in recent years. Alzheimer's, people who get Alzheimer's disease are people who consume more animal-based foods and build up that rather nasty kind of chemical that tends to build up in the brain and cause serious damage. Cow's milk, which is one of the animal-based foods and one of the more serious ones, I would say, as far as this effect is concerned, now is being shown to be related to the initiation of autoimmune diseases. And autoimmune diseases, let me name some. Type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is the kind that involves children straight off. They lose their ability to be able to produce insulin. And type 1 diabetes is very, very serious. It's where the immune system has been corrupted. It's been just been wrecked. And so it tends to turn against the body itself. Instead of attacking foreign agents that come into the body, it starts attacking tissues of our own and destroying our own tissues. Multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis is now being shown to be tightly linked with cow's milk consumption. There's about 300,000 to 350,000 people in this country who have multiple sclerosis. It's about 1 out of 1,000 people. We don't see them that often, but you know, I'm sure, it's a very serious disease. It was in 1976, in fact, in New Zealand, when they first published the show that if you compared cow's milk consumption with risk of multiple sclerosis, there was a relationship just like the dietary fat breast cancer phenomenon. We hear a lot, mostly anecdotal, I think, that cow's milk plays a fairly major role and the causation of childhood allergies as well. You'd be amazed what Socrates and Plato talked about. There's an account written 2,500 years ago when Socrates is trying to explain to his friend something about justice, and he focused on food, and he got a bit of an argument. At the end of the argument, his friend was saying, you know, if he got rich, he was going to eat cattle. And Socrates said, we're going to put the cows. It takes more land to produce the same food. than it does just to eat it straight off from plants. Incidentally, that's a really interesting observation, because a lot of scientists think they only discovered that in the last 20, 30 years. Socrates knew it 2,500 years ago. Anyhow, they went back and forth in this discussion. So his friend, finally Socrates says to him, okay, have it your way. Eat your cows. And in the future, he said, we're going to have a society that's going to be full of doctors and lawyers. 2,500 years ago. So I'm suggesting we need to have a new medical paradigm. And I say, for example, that whereas the major disease rates have not decreased in recent years in the United States, whereas medical care costs are the highest in the world, we have the highest per capita medical costs in the United States. Germany is next, 60% of ours. Whereas food production is costly, not only to our health, but also is environmentally unsound. Nutrition should be, will be, in my view, the major domain of medicine in the future. It has to be. Unless we start taking nutrition seriously, we're not going to be conquering some of these really huge problems, be they political, economic, cultural, philosophical, or whatever. If we consume a plant-based diet, rich in color, a variety of plant-based foods, and as lightly cooked as possible, maybe even, you know, lots of raw foods, not adding back a lot of salt, sugar, and fat, which we've become addicted to. If we eat that kind of diet, the kind of gains that we can make in terms of our health are really remarkable. Thank you very much.
This is Dr. John Westerdahl, and I hope you enjoyed the conclusion of Dr. Campbell's classic lecture on the China Study. If you missed part one of the lecture, you can still listen to it by going to our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. Again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's it for this week's program, and we encourage you to tune in next week to Health and Longevity. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.